You've had a dynamic where money's become freer than free.
If you talk about a Fed just gone nuts, all the central banks going nuts.
So it's all acting like safe haven.
I believe that in a world where central bankers are tripping over themselves to devalue their currency, Bitcoin wins. In the world of fiat currencies, Bitcoin is the victor.
I mean, that's part of the bull case for Bitcoin.
If you're not paying attention, you probably should be.
Dr. Mary Bowden, thank you for joining us. It's been a busy morning for you, I expect.
Yeah. Started my day with a summons. It's a first.
Is that in relation to the ongoing trial with the medical board?
Yes. So they were awarded summary judgment, which basically means that the judges looked at the evidence, denied me a hearing, and decided I was guilty. And so now I get to appear before them on Zoom because they are still in pandemic mode. Nothing is done in person anymore. To determine my punishment.
And is that the final sort of judgment? Is there an appeal process?
Well, I'm going to appeal. I mean, this was through a state office of administrative hearing, which 90-95% of the time they side with the government. So it's supposed to be fair, but I don't think it's fair.
No, neither do I, especially in 2025 with all the information we have. And that's why I wanted to have you on, is because I think with this incoming administration, the Trump administration obviously reached over the aisle, brought Bobby Kennedy into the administration, running on this MAHA movement, which has really shifted towards preventative health. But I was highly encouraged at the beginning of the MAHA movement, particularly to get some sort of justice as it pertains to what I would consider crimes against humanity that were levied on society from 2020 on, whether it was the economic lockdowns, the prevention of enabling doctors like yourself to give preventative medicines like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine. And then obviously the vaccine rollout, which I was highly skeptical of in the beginning and I'm not even skeptical anymore. I think the data is pretty clear that this is something that should not be on the market. And the fact that you're having to go through what you're going through personally, considering where public sentiment is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, it's discouraging, but I look at this as a war. I mean, COVID is a bioweapon. The pandemic was a war, and we're 5 years into the war. I guess my biggest concern is we don't have a treaty, and the current administration seems to be sweeping the war under the rug. I mean, this is a topic that directly impacted every single American. So we just must keep talking and must keep fighting.
Yeah. And it's funny because Callie Means was blowing up on X yesterday for his fireside chat, I guess you will, at some Politico event, it seemed like, in the room of big pharma lobbyists. But the topic of the conversation was about the cuts that have been made recently at the FDA, the NIH, and other agencies in the federal government. And it seems like they're, again, the shift of MAHA has become more like preventative, fix the food. We need to make sure that kids and individuals don't need medicine ultimately because they have good health in the first place. And like you said, the conversation, the big elephant in the room about vaccines has been completely swept under the rug. Do you have any sort of thoughts on why that is?
Well, everybody assured me we just need to get Trump into office. We just need to get Kennedy appointed. And then we'll start talking about the elephant in the room. But unfortunately, that has not happened. And in my opinion, it's purposeful. It's a misdirection strategy. It could possibly be funded by Big Pharma to focus everybody's attention on processed foods. And Yeah, I am not against that message. And I have told the interested parties that I'm not spoken to Callie about this directly. I support their message, but they will not support ours. I mean, Callie Means will not go on record to state that the COVID shot should be off the market. And I've had oral, I've had written conversations with him. And I just find that mind-boggling. And the only explanation at this point is that it's purposeful.
Yeah. And if you had to put forth the argument for why it should be removed from the market, what would that be?
I've never seen anything like this with any other product on the market. I mean, if this were a new antibiotic that had been rolled out and I'd seen the sort of injuries that I've seen with these COVID shots, I mean, it would have been yanked off a long time ago. It's all risk, no benefit. We have very effective early treatment. We're basically vaccinating a cold at this point. I'm seeing very concerning lab numbers. So I'm checking spike protein antibody levels in patients who ask to get checked. And it's very obvious to me who's gotten the shots and who hasn't, because the antibody levels are sky high in these patients and they haven't had a shot in years. And antibodies are supposed to wane with time. That's normally what happens. And then, yeah, they'll stabilize, but they don't remain. Yeah, I'm seeing 25,000, which is crazy. And in somebody that hasn't been vaccinated, it's typically under 1,000. That's very concerning. And it suggests that the spike protein is still active in the body, either just never went away or it's still being produced. And then, you know, they expect all babies to get 3 mRNA shots by the time they're 9 months old. It's still under EUA status for children under 12. We don't know the long-term implications of vaccinating children who their cells are rapidly dividing as they are growing. And we have suspicions that these shots could be causing cancer. So it's alarming. And, you know, the FDA typically will put a black box warning on a medication after 5 deaths. It will pull the product after 50 deaths. Well, according to VAERS, we have over 38,000 deaths attributed to these shots. And we know VAERS is a gross underestimation of what's really going on.
It's such a problem for me personally. Like I have 2 boys right now, 5 and almost 3. And my wife's pregnant with our 3rd. And this is a big conversation we're having in the household right now, which is our oldest is getting ready to go to kindergarten. You have all these EUA mandates and we're having to have the hard conversation of what are we going to do? And when it comes to the COVID shot specifically, it's like they're not getting it. And it's really unfortunate that the government and big pharma, the federal agencies associated with health, for some reason or another, do not want to confront this and are forcing parents to, they're forcing undue stress on parents throughout the country and throughout the world where these mandates still exist in other places as well.
Yeah. I'm curious, is your pediatrician pushing them?
No, we have a private pediatrician that we pay like a monthly due to similar to your setup. We were very early to get on that train because we recognized that when we had our 2nd child down here in Texas, our 1st was born in New York. The OB, like leading up before our 2nd was even born, was already talking about the schedule and what was happening, and we just didn't feel comfortable with it and went and found a private practice.
That's good. You're fortunate because you know, the 9 million American children have gotten the latest version of the shot. 9 million. It's hard to believe.
It is. And like you said, you're seeing the antibody levels at 25,000 and people that haven't had the shot, you know, it's been years since they've had the shot. And I think that's the scariest thing is the unknown long-term consequences of this. Right now we're 3 to 4 years post the first wave of the shots. And I think many people got the first 2 and then you had a precipitous fall off and the amount of people decide to keep getting the boosters. And so if you're seeing people who got two shots, maybe three, four, with these antibody levels 3 to 4 years after the fact, like, is there the potential that that just continues into perpetuity?
Well, definitely. I mean, I think, you know, if you haven't had a shot in 4 years and your antibody levels are 25,000, that just doesn't make sense. But, you know, it's the NIH, it's their job to fix this, to look into it, to figure out what's going on and to find an antidote. I mean, that's what's frustrating is there are a handful of doctors, and I'm one of them, trying to help the injured. And there's just not enough research. There's not enough resources for doctors like myself. We just don't have enough information. And I had the best luck with ivermectin. But even, you know, it's expensive for patients too. And you're basically just trying a variety of things and hoping some things will work. And usually you can get some improvements, but it's some of these patients are incredibly challenging and their lives have been destroyed. So we really need the NIH to step up.
What's up, freaks? Do you have a credit card? Are you getting cash back or airline points or points for some other service? Guess what? Those are shit coins. You want to be stacking Bitcoin. And I have some groundbreaking news for you. The team at Fold has finally released the Bitcoin Rewards credit card. They have a wait list. I'm going to be distributing the cards later this year. So you want to get on the wait list. Fold Plus members are going to get unlimited 2% Bitcoin back on this credit card. If you get on the wait list, they're up to $200,000 in prizes they're going to be given out. So get on it as quickly as possible. Go to tftc.io/fold and get on the wait list there. If you're on the wait list, you have the potential to win some of the prizes. Check it out. Sup, freaks? This rip of TFTC was brought to you by our good friends at CoinKite. They make the Cold Card Q, my favorite hardware wallet, the most secure hardware wallet on the market. As you can see, it's got the BlackBerry form factor, full keyboard. It's got two secure enclaves. You create your private public keys offline. The device never has to go online, never does go online. So you keep your Bitcoin secure. If you have your Bitcoin on exchanges and you're looking to get it off, secure it in the best way possible. Pick up a Cold Card Q. Go to coinkite.com, find the Cold Card Q, use the code TFTC for 5% off. If you're a power user of Bitcoin, like I am, if you're running a business on a Bitcoin standard, if you're just a Bitcoiner who wants to secure your Bitcoin, get the most secure hardware wallet on the market, go get the Cold Card Q. It's a beautiful thing. In your mind, outside of the higher levels of antibodies that you're seeing in people that got the shot years ago, what is another smoking? Like, we had Kevin McKernan on and we were dissecting the paper that came out of Japan that was swiftly pulled from the publisher after our discussion about the distribution, the change in the distribution of cancer types in individuals in Japan after the vaccine rollout in 2021. And I think that to me was some signal that people should be highlighting and saying, hey, something happened here in recent years where you have a normal distribution of the types of cancer that existed before 2021 and that has shifted since then. And oh, by the way, the cancers that are beginning to increase in frequency are in parts of the body where it seems like this spike protein is congregating.
Right. Yeah, I would be interested. I did not even see that study. So it was wiped. Is that what you're saying? Mm-hmm.
It was.
And just, did they give a reason or they just said it's just, and that was recent? It was wiped?
2 months ago, we recorded with Kevin, I believe, beginning of the year. And it was a preprint. There we go. I was going to say preliminary, but it was a preprint. It had been peer reviewed. And it got wiped, and that highlights another sort of problem of this interwoven web of corruption. You have big pharma with their incentives. You have the government, with a lot of people and big pharma planted in important places. And then the whole research side of things where I think that's what Kevin and I have discussed in our multiple conversations over the last year is this corruption of the research and the inability of people to get access to quality data because there are political reasons or political sort of incentives that exist in that arena as well that really don't allow information that the government doesn't want out there to actually see the light.
Yeah, I've been hearing about a bunch of pancreatic cancers, and you know, just friends, family, that sort of thing, and tried to find like the most recent data on pancreatic cancer and couldn't. And when you go to the American Cancer Society's website, they have this nice graph showing, you know, this huge drop in cancer death from cancer. And then it stops in 2022 and there's nothing. And I find that interesting. Like, why did that graph stop? I think you can get the cancer data, but to lay it out nicely so it's easy to interpret is purposely difficult.
Mm-hmm. And bringing this back to what happened earlier this week with the, I don't want to say decimation, but the cuts at the FDA, the NIH, do you think that's a move in the right direction? Get the people, because that's the other thing, the FDA specifically, you have people in the FDA that revolving door to big pharma exists. And is that something that you think is a good signal that they're trying to get the bad actors with corrupt incentives out of the agencies? And after that point, you can begin to actually make structural change and begin having this conversation.
Definitely. I mean, I kind of thought they'd start from scratch. I'm actually surprised, you know, it's been so controversial that they would be firing people. I don't obviously know much about the political process and how that works, but I was actually surprised that they would even consider keeping anybody from the agencies in the prior administration. I mean, it's as corrupt as it's ever been, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it's crazy how quickly the amnesia set in about what happened between 2020. And I would say 2022 specifically, the traumatization of the economic lockdowns, the inability to have early treatment, and the taking away of bodily autonomy from the government. And I think it's insane how quickly people have moved on. And today the big topic in the news is tariffs. And there are certainly larger issues that exist outside of the realm of the pandemic and the reaction to the pandemic from the FDA and the medical establishment. But this is not something that we can simply gloss over and brush under the rug, because again, as you mentioned, the ramifications of what took place are still manifesting today. And it doesn't seem like something where you can just put your head in the sand and brush it under the rug. If we continue on this path, how bad do you think it can get?
Well, the biggest issue I see in my practice is the lack of trust. So people are terrified to go to the hospitals. They don't trust any doctors, and with good reason, unfortunately. And so if the government wants to help restore that trust, then we can't sweep it under the rug. It's just like a festering wound, and we ignore it. It's just going to get worse. And so we need transparency. We need accountability. In my opinion, we need a constitutional amendment to protect bodily autonomy. There are a lot of states working on this, and it's been a big struggle. I mean, you would think it's common sense, right? That you can't mandate anything on a person that has a risk, right? That there's a risk that you can't force somebody to undergo any sort of medical treatment or medical procedure. That's pretty basic and common sense. And yet that was violated during the pandemic. And by not stopping them, by just pretending it didn't happen, we just emboldened them. And there will most likely be another pandemic, hopefully not any time in the near future, but we just embolden them by doing nothing. So we need, you know, if it were up to me, there'd be a constitutional amendment. And apparently that's, I looked into this, there have been 11,000 amendments proposed and only 27 have passed. So it's a big endeavor. But we need that. We need the mRNA shots to be pulled off the market, and we need to make ivermectin over the counter.
Well, on that last point, it seems like there's been some progress at the state level, at least to make ivermectin available over the counter. I think I saw you tweeting Idaho is moving a bill through their state legislator to make this possible.
Yeah, there are 14 states that have bills that are under consideration. And Arkansas recently passed a bill. Tennessee already passed it in 2022. And there are nuances. So it's going to be hard to put the medication next to the Tylenol bottles. In these instances, you do have to get it from a pharmacist, but you don't have to get a prescription from the doctor. So it's not as easily accessible as I would like. And the only way to make that happen is the FDA would make it over the counter. Then you could put it on the shelf next to Tylenol. But this is the next best step. So the people in Tennessee are able to access the medication more easily than the people in Texas. And I still have problems getting ivermectin for my patients. And I just don't bother sending the prescription to Walgreens or CVS anymore because of all the pushback I've gotten. So I send it to an independent pharmacy, which is fine, but it's not covered by insurance. They're not open on weekends usually. It creates extra steps for me because I have to, you know, enter in a new pharmacy. And it's just unnecessary. I mean, this drug is safer than Tylenol.
I've heard so many anecdotal stories outside of COVID. I mean, I took ivermectin in 2021. I got COVID. I think the Delta variant was that one. That was the bad one. I got that pretty bad. In the first couple of days, were hard. Then I got my hands on ivermectin, had to go to a mom and pop pharmacy in South New Jersey where I was at the time to get it. But within a couple of days, I was back on my feet feeling good. And for COVID, it seems obvious to me that it was working for many people. But then you hear about these use cases. It's been described as a miracle drug. I have a friend who had really bad acne breakout on his face, and it persisted for years. And he tried everything in the book to make it go away. And then one day he had a conversation with the doctor, said, why don't we try ivermectin? Took ivermectin. Within a month, his face was completely clear. And so the sort of range of things that ivermectin seems to treat seems pretty broad, and it seems like it'd be something that we would want to have easy access to as individuals that are looking to take care of these ailments that, again, are broad.
This may be a stretch, but it's probably easier to access Vicodin than it is ivermectin in most states. So yeah, it's pretty crazy. It has 21 mechanisms of action, a lot of anti-inflammatory mechanisms of action, and it has virtually no side effects. So it really is a miracle drug. And yeah, it would be wonderful to see some states lead the way and make it over the counter.
Yeah. And is it simply because Big Pharma can't make enough money off of it? Do you think that's why?
Yeah, you know, part of it is the FDA. I mean, the FDA branded it. They put out that horse tweet and with the attractive healthcare worker nuzzling the horse and says, seriously, y'all, you're not a horse, you're not a cow, stop it. And that tweet went viral. That was late August 2021. And that's right after that, Joe Rogan got, you know, smeared. And I actually sued the FDA over that and won. And they had to take down their misinformation online. But unfortunately, yeah, the brand lives on. And I think the FDA, in addition to making it over the counter, they need to issue a statement, a public statement saying that, no, you know, ivermectin is intended for humans and is very safe. And basically, they need to rebrand ivermectin.
The new administration is pushing hard for government efficiency. But can Elon Musk and Doge fix the dollar? On April 16th, PhD economist Peter St. Ange explains why Bitcoin is the most important tool for government efficiency and how the principles underlying the global shift towards sound money can help you protect and grow your generational wealth. Register now at unchained.com/TFTC. That's unchained.com/TFTC.
Well, should the FDA exist in the first place, do you think? I think this is a question that many people are asking.
Well, I mean, you do want somebody to regulate the safety of drugs. I would say that but I'm actually getting ready to sue the FDA again. They're too big for their britches at this point. They're overstepping their bounds. So in this situation, what we're doing, it's a drug company that has a great off-label use for their product. And it's very safe. The data looks great in terms of effectiveness, but the FDA is very slow to give them the indication. And if they don't have the FDA indication, they can't advertise it. They can't inform doctors. They can't inform potential patients about, you know, the off-label use. So I'm going to join this company and sue the FDA to allow them to educate people about off-label uses of medications. Because repurposed drugs, I mean, that's what we relied on during the pandemic. That say, you know, in my experience, if people use these medications early, they survived. And we could have saved so many people's lives by using these repurposed off-label drugs. And it's important that the FDA doesn't stand in that in the way of, I mean, that's it's a new avenue. It's actually much more affordable too. So use drugs that we already have in different ways instead of reinventing the wheel and coming, you know, it's very expensive to develop drugs. And if we can find drugs that are already out there that can work in other ways, that would it'd be wonderful.
Yeah. Now, and as it pertains to the FDA, I mean, Peter Thiel said too many people focus on the inputs of anything, whether it's a company, sports, whatever it is, people focus on the inputs of what goes in. Nobody really, what you should be focusing on is the outputs. And if you look at the output of the FDA, the inputs are pedigrees, degrees, people with experience in big pharma and publicly, where people are not as attuned as to what's actually going on in the sphere of medicine, that looks good. The inputs look good. Look at this prestige that is building up at the FDA, and look at all these papers and website articles they're putting out. But when you actually look at the output, the advice that they were giving, whether it was the mask, social distancing, we need to flatten the curve, ivermectin off the shelves, you can't take that. No hydroxychloroquine, take this experimental mRNA vaccine. The outputs are objectively abhorrent, and that's only as it pertains to COVID. Another thing, personally, again, baby formula, like the only FDA approved baby formula is filled with seed oils and crap that really is not good for children. Then you have something like Serenity Kids, which is no seed oils, like pure grass fed cow milk, I believe. And they're not allowed to say that their formula is good for toddlers and infants because it's not technically FDA approved. So if I look at just those examples that are pertinent to my life specifically, it's like the outputs of what the FDA is producing are not beneficial to me and my family specifically. Actually, they're harmful in a way, very harmful objectively. And I would agree. I think it is very important. Division of labor exists for a reason, and you don't want people simply putting things on the market that could be harmful to individuals. But I think it's clear that the outputs of the FDA are a net negative for the United States populace overall. And It seems like maybe this isn't a problem that the federal government should be solving.
I think in general, the federal government needs to ease away from the doctor-patient relationship and telling people what to do about their health and, you know, minimally involved in health. And because we saw what happened during the pandemic, it was so mismanaged. And, you know, we had bureaucrats dictating how doctors would treat patients. And these bureaucrats were, you know, sitting in their bedrooms over Zoom calls, deciding what the standard of care was. I mean, it's completely absurd. And so we never want to see that again. But, you know, they have discredited themselves so much that, you know, I don't know if it matters what they say anymore. Anybody with common sense is going to ignore them.
Are you seeing more common sense amongst your peers?
It's hard to know. I mean, it seems like on X, I see a lot more doctors following me and commenting than I have before, that, you know, names that I don't recognize, which is encouraging. I do have people, you know, doctors reach out to me here and there, you know, on a, you know, like they stop by my office or they call, that sort of thing, which is nice. But I do think there's still a large contingent of doctors out there that still don't get it. and, you know, haven't really learned anything, unfortunately. And I do worry about our young doctors, the people in the medical schools and in training, because, you know, those academic centers are the most rigid in their thinking. And it's just a ripe atmosphere for, you know, brainwashing and, you know, in training, you're trained to comply. And it's, I've never been in the military, but I imagine it's similar. You're just, you stay in line and you don't deviate outside the lines. And that's concerning. But yeah, I just think it's, we'll see what happens. I mean, the new administration has the potential to change the course of that. But it just depends on what they want to do. And right now, it just seems like they're talking about red dyes and processed food.
And for the students studying medicine right now, is it somewhat of a funnel to the very corporate medical system, where you have these big behemoths of corporate-owned hospital systems and pediatric practices that basically get a mandate from up above from corporate headquarters, which is typically corrupted by close ties to big pharma and insurance companies?
Well, 98% of doctors are employed. 77% are employed by a hospital. 20% are employed by an insurance company or a private equity group. And 2% are employed by the government. So that leaves 1% who are truly independent and, you know, third party free. That's what I call myself, because I don't contract with insurance companies, hospitals, or the government. And the only people I work for are my patients. But that is a rare breed, unfortunately. And the government could encourage more doctors to go this route. And they could encourage patients to use doctors like us. They could expand the use of health savings accounts so that any money that you spend on physician fees is tax-free. That would be helpful. They could, you know, give us, you know, small business loans to help doctors get on their feet as an independent doctor, because it is hard. It's harder to be independent in a lot of ways, because you're running a business at the same time you're treating patients, and it's time consuming. But I do it because I appreciate the freedom and the flexibility and the ability to, you know, treat my patients the way I want to treat them.
Yeah. And on the patient side, it's hard as well to untether yourself from the insurance system. Like, we use CrowdHealth in our family, which is this crowdfunded healthcare model where we pay a monthly fee and then we help crowdfund other bills. But if we ever have a health event, we pay the first $500 and the rest gets crowdfunded. And I've been on that for 3 years now, and it is way cheaper than insurance, but it's much scarier, at least at the beginning. It's not scary to me now, but in the beginning, it's like, oh, it seems this is a new model. It's foreign, not familiar with it. Insurance, I've had it. It's just like you're fish in water. You're taught growing up, like, oh, you go to the doctor, your mom, how did you pay for that? Well, we have insurance. And I feel like that insurance sort of tether that exists on the patient side as well is a big stick in the mud, because it makes it harder for people to make the jump to private doctors like yourself that are running your own firms. And so, like, we haven't even talked about insurance, but like insurance plays a big role in this as well.
Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, so many people, their deductibles are so high now that they're basically a cash paying patient unless something catastrophic happens, which in some ways is good, because, you know, when you think about it, with your car, you don't use your insurance to get your oil change. You use it if you get in a crash. And you could look at health insurance in the same way. And if you pay out of pocket for your basics, you're going to get a better experience and save the insurance for the, you know, more serious catastrophic issues that might come up. And hopefully you get lower premiums as well. But you know, there's direct primary care is a growing movement. It's doctors that don't take insurance usually pay a monthly fee, and the fee is comparable to a gym membership in price. It's usually not super high, and you get a lot more access to your doctor, and it should equate into a higher quality experience. Now, not all of them are like-minded when it comes to COVID, so you still have to screen for that. I mean, I've run across a few that are definitely not on my side. But you stand a better chance of getting a more objective care that is not, you don't have a third party whispering in your doctor's ear.
The experience we've had has been incredible. You have the ability to text at any hour, 7 days a week, and you get a pretty quick response. So, I mean, we had an instance a couple of years ago where one of our boys was had a high fever middle of the night. We were able to text at 1 a.m. and got a response within 30 minutes.
Wow. That's impressive.
You're probably not going to get that at your run-of-the-mill pediatric doctor involved in a healthcare system. Yeah.
What state are you located in?
I'm in Texas.
Oh, so what part of Texas?
Austin.
Oh, so do you want to share the name of that practice so I can send people, or is it?
My wife handles the site. We had to switch. We were using Veronica Max for a while, but she closed her practice to spend time with her family. But we moved on to another. I don't know the name off the top of my head, but okay. That was our first experience with this primary care private doctor, and it was incredible. And so I think the experience with Veronica has convinced us, like, moving forward, this is the way that this is the way we're going to interact with the healthcare system.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah. In terms of a call to action for anybody listening to this, obviously you got your summons this morning. The government here in Texas does not seem keen on coming to their senses and recognizing that something is wrong here. They're just going to take the orders from the government and do what they're told. Obviously we have the MAHA movement planted in the administration, but they don't seem focused on what I believe you and I would deem to be a more important topic, which is making sure that people aren't getting poisoned with these mRNA vaccines. Outside of conversations like this, like, what do you think, anybody who is listening to this and agrees with us that there's a problem that is not being addressed, what do you think people need to do?
Well, it depends on how much time you have. If you don't have much time, you can send an email or call your representatives about legislation that would help our movement, especially in Texas. Texas is on the brink of turning blue, in my opinion. And I believe that healthcare is part of that. I think, you know, mandates started here. So mandates started April 1st, 2021, when Houston Methodist declared it was mandating the shot for its employees. And that's sort of how I got involved in all this, because I had privileges there and I spoke out against the mandates. And then they suspended my privileges in a very public fashion. And this was 5 months before Biden. So they really led the way and they paved the way for the rest of the country. And I believe it was purposeful. They knew if they could get away with the mandates in Texas, they could get away with them anywhere. And we have the largest medical center in the world in Houston, 61 hospitals. They're the largest cancer center. We have the largest children's hospital. And it brings people in from all over the world and dilutes our values. But we can fight back. I mean, there are a lot of bills under consideration now. I was actually just in Austin yesterday and the day before testifying on these bills. But, you know, the House is moving so slowly. It's hard to believe that much is going to actually happen because there are only 9 weeks left and they've heard very few bills. So it's a little bit discouraging. But there's one bill in particular that would help me. It's SB 2422. And it is a bill that would exonerate any doctor that was disciplined by the Texas Medical Board during the pandemic when it regards off-label use of medications or masks. So, I mean, there's one doctor, Eric Hinson, who had his license removed temporarily because he wasn't wearing a mask in his clinic. Stella Emanuel has had over 30 complaints against her to the medical board. No patients harmed. And, you know, my legal fees now are $260,000 just fighting these medical board complaints. There was not a patient harm involved in any of them. But this bill would clean the record and reimburse us for our legal fees. It would be wonderful. And then yesterday I was testifying for a bill and I can't remember the number, but it was Shelley Luther. So Shelley Luther, I don't know if you know her story, but she was put in jail for 3 days because she refused to lock down. So she had a hair salon and she knew, you know, she's like, I've got people that are depending on their income. And she refused to shut down her salon. And when she was imprisoned for 3 days and she ran for office and won. So she is a state representative and she introduced her first bill yesterday. And what it would do is if a pharmaceutical company that has a vaccine, if they decide they're going to advertise their product, so on TV or, you know, online, et cetera, if they advertise in Texas, then they are liable for their product. So vaccine manufacturers have no liability for their product. But this bill, if they're going to advertise, they would be liable. They could be sued if anything goes wrong for their product.
So is that a way to get around the EUA?
Well, it's a way to get around the PREP Act. Yeah. So, yeah. So it would just be a way that you could actually, because right now you can't sue them. You go to a vaccine injury compensation program, and it's very difficult, even going to that court, to get reimbursed. And the average reimbursement is low. I know for COVID, I think it's only 66 people have been reimbursed, and the average reimbursement is $3,000, which is really pathetic. So it's you have basically no rights, and most people don't even know that if they get a vaccine or if they get the COVID shot, that if something goes wrong, they're out of luck. So this is it's a small step, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Yeah, is EUA the right term? It's because it's on the childhood schedule. That's why they don't have liability, right?
Yeah, EUA is emergency use authorization, which basically just allows you to get it out there without full approval from the FDA. In terms of liability protection, I think the PREP Act, you know, that gives them just blanket immunity. But that's for more than just the COVID shots. I mean, that's for hospital workers, anything that happens in the hospital. And, you know, if you give remdesivir, that sort of thing.
Yeah, well, that would be great if you're in Texas. Make sure, because it's crazy what's going on here. Like there's a lot of important bills. One that we're very very keen on getting passed in the Bitcoin community. There's a bill about Texas adding Bitcoin as a strategic reserve asset. And as you said, many Bitcoiners have been paying attention to that, wondering when that's going to hit the floor. I think I would concede that what you're pushing for is probably more important. Bodily autonomy and health is probably more important than getting Bitcoin on the state balance sheet. But you have examples like yesterday, they took the time to vote to make it a Pakistan Day in Texas. Or
yesterday? What, are you serious? That was yesterday?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's crazy. Texas also has a bill to make ivermectin over the counter. And they have a bill to ban mRNA shots, but neither one of those bills have been sent to a committee hearing yet, unfortunately. So I'm sure it will progress.
Do you think the push to make Texas blue is similar to what they did with making the Houston hospital system the first to issue mandates? Is if you can turn Texas blue, you can really take down one of the biggest dominoes in the United States to push all these Orwellian collectivist laws and mandates on people.
Right. I mean, as goes Texas, as goes the country. So if they can take down Texas with, you know, the infiltration from the Democrats and take Texas, and that's a huge deal. I mean, that would be, it's just interesting to me that people are not more aware of what's going on. But in this last election, there was an influx of new representatives. There was some overturn, but unfortunately, the old regime still reigns. So there's still more work to do, but they did make some progress.
Are you optimistic that the tides can turn, or do you think it's, this is talked about nationally, like turning, I mean, that was the big meme, Texas is purple, we're going to turn it blue. You have AOC out there campaigning in Texas to turn it blue. And as somebody, I'm from the Northeast, originally I'm one of the refugees from New York when things got crazy, post-COVID came down, a lot of the Bitcoin industry shifted down here, so followed a lot of people to work in peace. And I like to think that I am not one of those people who came here and is trying to bring the policies of the states I came from with me. I think objectively I'm not. My voting history would prove that. But it is something that's in it, particularly here in Austin. You just look at it, Austin, you've got cranes in the sky all over the place. There's a lot of people and companies flooding in. And one thing, having been here for 4 years now and doing my best to experience the authentic Texas way as much as possible, getting out to different parts of the state and talking to people that were born and raised here and trying to understand what the state is all about. It is something that should be preserved. And I really love the spirit of Texas specifically. Would it be a great shame if just by brute force, people were able to really change the nature of the state?
Well, I don't think people realize how much healthcare dominates our economy. If you look at jobs on Indeed, the number one job in Texas is for RNs. So it dominates our economy. If you look at healthcare and how healthcare workers vote, you know, 10 years ago, it was predominantly conservative. They voted Republican, but that has completely shifted. So now most healthcare professionals are Democrats, and our state is dominated by healthcare. And like I said, it brings people in from all over the world. It's unfortunate, but I'm not sure how we stop it. You look at TMA, Texas Medical Association. It's the largest medical association or state medical association in the country. And I mean, they support mandates. They still support mandates. They discourage free speech. They were against SB 14, which is the bill that prohibits gender transitioning of minors. They lobbied against that, and that's the largest medical association in the country. And you would think in Texas that wouldn't be happening, but And they went after me. I mean, they joined a group called Shots Heard. And the group's purpose was to attack doctors like myself online who were spreading misinformation and report them to the medical board and try to get them delicensed. Texas Medical Association is a member of this group. I mean, it's really bizarre.
That seems the whole healthcare industry, what you just described in Texas, it seems like there's got to be some sort of conflict of interest involved there that should be obvious. And there should be like a clear demarcation between what people can fund and who they can go after based off of the incentives they have.
Well, you know, the government, Biden, funded these groups, these influencer groups to go after doctors and to, you know, basically propagandize the shot. I mean, and that so there was a program called COVID-19 Community Core, and it launched the exact same day that Houston Methodist declared it was mandating the shot. So it was April 1st, 2021. It was a $10 billion program. So this is a government program. It was doled out to all these different influencer groups, started with 275, and it grew to over 17,000. The money's untraceable. It's so complicated, going to all these nonprofits but I do not think it was a coincidence that, you know, Methodists declared the mandate and this program came out on the exact same day.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we were not because of this, but like the USAID money that went to NGOs that funded campaigns, mine wasn't really an influencer campaign per se, but USAID funded the Center for Countering Digital Hate, which put me, this channel, this YouTube channel, on a list for, I was defined as a new denier in the realm of climate change. We've had a lot of climate scientists that don't agree with the mainstream narrative that we are doomed for cataclysmic climate change in the near future on, just put their case forward. And because of that, USAID funneled money to Center for Countering Digital Hate, which put me on a list. And they basically had an AI system to scrape our transcripts to find any episode which we talked about climate change. And then they would send that to YouTube and tell them to demonetize that particular episode. And that's happened with COVID too. I don't know what specific list we're on, but early during the pandemic, we had a doctor from Wyoming, Doc Woods, on the show. And he was in his 70s and he was giving out ivermectin, and he got his license pulled early on in the pandemic because he was giving ivermectin. And I had him on the show to give his story. And it was at the time, during COVID, when censorship was at its peak. And so that episode didn't even get demonetized. It got pulled down completely. But to think that, I would not be surprised if there was some similar sort of funneling of government money to an NGO to tattletale on this channel, to YouTube, to highlight, hey, they're talking about wrong think on the show. You should pull it down.
Yeah, it's still, the censorship is still happening. I mean, I did a episode with Danny Jones, and Jack Cruz was on there, and they had to bleep out vaccine. So every time one of us said vaccine, they had to mute it so that they wouldn't get deplatformed from YouTube. It's insane.
Yeah.
I just did an interview with Tucker Carlson, and he told me that he'd had a meeting with the YouTube head honcho, or, you know, somebody up high, about the censorship. And YouTube has promised now not to censor COVID misinformation. They're going to allow us to talk about it now. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, they'll allow you to talk about it, but they probably won't feed it into the algorithm. That's true. It was. It's insane to think that it's really scary. I think people listening to this show understand, but that's one thing I hope, whether it's in regards to COVID, climate change, whatever, that like this should not be happening in America. American companies, the government, number one, should not be printing money or issuing debt to fund NGOs to propagandize the American people and tattletale on companies to censor individuals. But censorship, it's like, hopefully this Trump administration can turn the tide, but we're reaching a precipice that if we cross over, it's going to be very scary moving forward. You look over to Europe, like the UK and Germany and Ireland, and you know, you can't publicly state certain things without the threat of going to jail. And many Americans will point and laugh at that, but we're not too far away from that here as well.
That's right. That's right. Well, I have hope. I mean, I was kicked off Twitter for 5 months, and I got reinstated on Christmas Day. Thank you, Elon. So, you know, hopefully we've hit our low point and we're rising in the right direction, heading in the right direction.
Yeah, I hope so as well. Well, Mary, I want to thank you for all you're doing. I know today particularly was probably a bit frustrating for you. So I thank you for taking the time to sit down with me less than an hour after you got that summons from the medical board. Keep fighting. I think what you're doing is extremely important. I think most importantly, little by little, I've been following you on X for years now. You're instilling confidence in people. And I think you alluded to it earlier. You have other doctors beginning to hop in your replies with words of encouragement, people coming up to you. I think little by little, the more you continue to march on, the more confidence you're going to instill in others to speak out against this. Because I think that's the most important thing right now, is just to not let this elephant get swept under the rug. Keep shouting about it. There needs to be retribution. The people that really orchestrated the crimes against humanity from 2020 on, they need to be held accountable. And this is not something that I'm going to forget. It's not something that many others aren't going to forget. And we need to make sure that anybody who's sleepwalking out there needs to wake up and realize, hey, this was a crime against humanity, and there needs to be retribution. People need to be held accountable.
Agree. And I appreciate you having me on to help me with that effort.
Thank you, Mary. Keep crushing it. We'll be following your story, and hopefully the next time you're Austin, we can meet up in person.
Definitely.
All right. Peace and love, freaks.